Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special short podcast. We're talking about Dynasty Warriors 9. It's out now. It's a game we've been very excited for, and we thought that it's so exciting and so interesting and so worth talking about. We do a dedicated podcast on it amongst our reviews and all the other coverage we're doing as well. So with me for this special podcast, we have two other people who've been playing through the game like mad. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hello, Brad.
Hello.
And when I say we've been playing through it like mad, it's because it's like a 250-hour long game to actually get through. And yeah, they didn't give us that long before embargo lifted. So anyway, we'll cut this, have some music from Dynasty Warriors 9, get us all in the mood, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the game. And welcome back, everyone. Okay, so Dynasty Warriors 9. Like I said, we've been really looking forward to this one since we heard rumors about 2 years ago, I think now, that it was going to be an open world game. And Koei Tecmo's been plugging away at it for quite a while. I think it's safe to say it's probably the biggest departure from previous games in the series that we've seen to date. And people always say that they want to see Dynasty Warriors evolve and change and stuff, and it never does, so they say. They're wrong, but that's what they say. This time they certainly can't deny it. It's a huge departure from previous games in the series, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. It almost feels like playing a different game.
It really does, doesn't it? Like, it's not just the open world thing either. It's
no, there are so many things.
You go.
It feels like what I think Dynasty Warriors wanted to be right from the start. Just in terms of finally they've got the technology to realize that vision of basically being like a real-time strategy game, except you're just one guy on the battlefield in the thick of it. One very strong person. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like, as I've been playing through it as well, my thought has always been, as somebody who's read through, who's actually managed to slog all my way through Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which is the book that the game's based on, I've been thinking, you know, this is probably what Koei Tecmo's game developers were thinking of when they first read through the book and decided to make a game about it.
Yeah.
And it was certainly hard to do beforehand because the way the technology limitations they had to break the game down into levels, like distinct levels. This is one stage, this is the next stage, this is one battle. And those battles could be huge and those levels could be huge, but it was always constrained by being a level. This is the first time that they've just managed to, you know, present China itself as the battlefield and then have everything seamlessly transition from one event to the next, which is obviously exactly how it kind of plays out in the book. The book's not split into levels as such.
Is it split into chapters?
Well, it has chapters, but they all seamlessly integrate from one to the other. It's like, it's an odd book to read with the way the chapter system works. But yeah, it there's no breaks in it like previous Dynasty Warriors games had. So yeah, it's definitely what I think they wanted to create. So yeah, I mean, Brad, what are your thoughts on it? You've obviously played quite a few of these games in the past. Do you think this one has changed things up?
Yeah, I started playing Dynasty Warriors all the way back on Dynasty Warriors 3 on the PlayStation 2, and with this game, I think it's the biggest change in a Dynasty Warriors game since they stopped pronouncing the leader of Wei as Cao Cao.
That was pretty innovative, must be said. Yeah. Pronounce it right.
First time they pronounced it, Cao Cao, I was cheering. Yeah, absolutely. The way the game plays now, I think, like you both say, the way that the battles flow, it feels much more natural in terms of how a battle would play out rather than just one person versus an entire army. You're actually joining other people's battles. You're helping them take over different areas. You're trying to basically take over China bit by bit. And it just seems it's much more seamless. It's much more natural feeling. And you're not just killing 1,000 people in the space of 15 minutes. It actually takes, you know, 45 minutes to an hour to build up to that kind of number.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the mission structure, even beyond the open world bit, the mission structure is really interesting, because the way it works is you've got the target, the end boss, whatever you want to call them, already there on the battlefield pretty much straight away. So you know exactly where you need to go to finish the chapter. But that boss is probably, 15, 20 levels above you to start with. And you've got basically no chance of actually beating him if you beeline straight to him and try to take him on. So the only way to get about it, to go around it, is to go and complete a whole bunch of more minor missions and take over smaller fortresses and so on. And each time you do that, it drops the level of the end boss a bit. So that's I love the way it flows. Like, I really love the way that it starts with small skirmishes and minor enemy leaders, and slowly works up to these, you know, really powerful, important boss type characters, warlords. So yeah, it has that kind of ebb and flow of an actual military campaign, that it starts, you know, quite slow and easy, and then gathers in intensity as it gets closer to the final battle in each chapter.
Yeah, the first time I played it, I remember trying to find I can't remember the name of whoever I was trying to beat in the minor mission. I happened to just go straight into Zhang Jiao's castle immediately, and that was a mistake.
I think I the first time I. Each of us, just for the listeners, so the listeners know, we've all been playing different campaigns. Brad and Matt have been playing through the Cao Cao campaign because they apparently like tyrants. And Cao Cao's not a nice guy, but anyway.
That's Three Kingdoms. Everyone's a tyrant.
I've been playing through Wu, so the Sun family, because they're the best. Anyway, when I was playing through, the first time I got a chance to have a swipe at Cao Cao, I decided I was going to go straight to the castle. And that was a very bad mistake, because he had Xiao Hao Dun and other rather important leaders and vicious fighters standing right next to him. And it was over pretty quickly. I should say, before we go any further, apologies to anybody if we pronounce these names terribly. They're hard for our Aussie and New Zealand accented tongues to get around sometimes. Thankfully, the game has a Chinese voice track finally, so you can actually listen to the game in the language it was intended, which is a nice touch, I believe.
I think it's a great touch.
I don't know if you guys have been playing through with a Chinese voice track, but once I discovered that in the options and turned it on, I haven't looked back since.
I turned that on straight away because I'd heard about it from you, so that was the first thing I went looking for. I switched to English for a little bit just to hear what it sounds like, and the English voice acting is not great. They're good at pronouncing the names. Everything else is terrible.
Yeah, that's always been a hallmark, I think, of the Dynasty Warriors series, to the point I'm pretty sure Koei Tecmo actually deliberately hires bad voice actors, or tells the voice actors to, you know, be bad, because it's part of the culture and humor around the game for the English voice actors.
But definitely, it seems deliberate, but it's annoying enough that I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure they recruited good Chinese voice actors. I haven't listened to too many Chinese films, I must admit. I mean, I've listened to a fair few, but not enough to really get a sense of what's a great actor as opposed to a middling one. But I quite like the way that they voice their lines and the intonations and stuff. So yeah, that's a really nice touch, and it's been a long time coming for Dynasty Warriors, and should have happened beforehand, because the game is so focused on the history of China that it just doesn't make sense to have another language track on it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, no, I've tried all three of them. I turned English off as soon as Guan Yu sounded like an 18-year-old boy. And Chinese Pokemon, definitely.
Yeah, I can imagine Guan Yu with a high-pitched, squeaky voice. That would be...
Oh, it was so weird.
Is Lu Bu still the most overdramatic? Like, I'm not actually tough, but I'm going to be a tough voice actor guy, yeah. Because...
I haven't listened to any cutscenes with him in English.
Yeah, Lu Bu's a bit of a legend. What do you all think of the costuming as well? Because one of the things I noticed about the game was they've really dialed down the hyperbole with the costume designs. The weapons are still way out there and weird and crazy and would not work on an actual battlefield. But I think that's because they needed the variety. Otherwise, everyone would have swords and they'd get pretty dull pretty quickly. But the costumes, I wouldn't say, I mean, I haven't seen enough of fashion from, you know, just after Christ was born, as this game said. Was it BC? It might have been BC.
Around 100, like second century kind of thing, I think.
Oh, okay. So a little bit after. Okay. Anyway, yeah. I haven't seen Chinese fashion from that period, but I get the impression that at least it's, that they're trying to be authentic to, you know, Chinese clothing in general. And I like that touch as well. I like it's a little bit more subtle and a little bit more... It's easier to take it a bit more seriously, I guess, is what I'm saying.
It definitely comes across as more believable and more... And I'm also not well acquainted with ancient Chinese fashion, but it comes across as a lot more believable and serious than some of the costuming in the past games.
Yeah, and also the character designs, like what's his name? Cao Cao's one of his generals, the big chubby guy from previous games. The really huge one. Can't remember his name now.
Don't worry, I can't remember anyone's name.
Anyway, there's a guy in previous Dynasty Warriors games, Cao Cao's one of his lieutenants, playable character and all that, was basically as round as he was tall and carried a huge, you know, weapon with a big ball thing at the end, like a club with a big ball at the end, and was, you know, he was kind of in the book, he's written up as a large guy, a very big guy, and quite simple. And that's how they, you know, simpleton. And that's how they translated it into the game as that. This time around, he's still big, but it's within the realms of possibility of a guy who spends time on the battlefield again. So he looks more muscular, I want to say, and he still carries a huge weapon, but yeah, he seems more within the parameters of what a human being should look like, which is again a nice thing. I like that more serious tone that the game's got, because as much fun as it is to play the Dynasty Warriors and just kind of whack buttons around and stuff, it's nice to be reminded that these are actually based on history and the people. There are people out there that have a lot of respect for the book and the period of history. So it's nice that there's a game that kind of appeals to them or has been designed for them.
Yeah, I've got the game open at the moment. So for reference, Cao Cao was born, or not, yeah, he was born in 155 and died in 200. If that gives you an idea of how old, how ancient this is. And trying not to completely butcher this guy's name, but the large man you're referring to is Zhu Xu, I think.
Ah, yes, that's right. His historic name is actually a little bit different to the way it's pronounced in the game and spelt, but yeah, that's the character I'm talking about. Yeah, so, I think
he was like a wheat farmer from memory. So I think his body... more accurately depicts what he probably would have looked like back then rather than like the giant, like fat boulder he used to be.
Yeah. Like I really like his design now. I never used to play the character at all or follow him along because I thought he was just a ridiculous caricature. And this time around, I really like him. I think they've done a good job with him. And that goes for all the other characters. There's a guy in the Wu crew. that's good. I like that. I just came up with that. And he's a pirate, he was a river pirate before he went legit. And back in the previous Dynasty Warriors games, he was really ridiculous. This time around, he's just a bit shirtless, which is fine. Probably not how they fought battles back then, but again, it's more muted, it's more natural, and there's still that variety between the characters, so people who liked a certain character is still going to recognize that character in the game, but at the same time, it's pulled back just enough that I guess new people don't feel overwhelmed with how ridiculous it all looks. So what do you all think also about the actual design of the world? Because, I mean, if you take a quick look at it, it's obviously not as outwardly beautiful as Horizon, a game like Horizon or, I don't know, Assassin's Creed Origins. But at the same time, I feel when I'm playing it, it has a really good feel, the design of the world.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that sentiment. I think it's the world feels more grounded, I guess. So it's not a world that it feels like a real place, not like a video game. It's not a world that has been designed to give you a bunch of different types of areas, and this is the forest area and this is the snow area, and it's based on a real place and it's designed to just look like a real place and how it would have looked then. And I think that really comes through quite well when you're just riding across the plains on horseback, and it's you're not being constantly wowed by beautiful vistas, but it just has a sense of place that I think a lot of open world games struggle with.
Well, it's set in ancient China. It is what it is, and I think it serves its purpose like beautifully. And like I said, you don't get distracted by a lot of beautiful stuff. Like it is very grounded, and you just see like you're just traveling and you're just fighting. I guess you just concentrate on the battle. Like, war isn't pretty, so this game kind of takes it on board. Like, it doesn't have to be a pretty game, but it definitely does what it needs to do to set the tone.
Yeah. I mean, I it has moments where it feels really atmospheric. Like, there's a scene. Oh. Hopefully, I captured it on video. Hopefully I kept a capture of it because it's really nice. There was a scene where I was actually in the process of attacking a fort, and I was actually moving through a bamboo forest, and it was raining at the time, and the atmosphere of the weather effect plus the fact that you could see through the bamboo the fortress kind of poking out, it wasn't the kind of game that I wanted a screenshot mode for. I didn't want a camera mode or anything like that, but I certainly felt like I was immersed within the kind of the experience that the game was providing.
See, I do want a camera mode. I do want a screenshot mode because it's not as aggressively beautiful in its design, but it's still a very beautiful game. And just, I think in particular, when you're walking around the cities, the architecture and just getting to really appreciate that and appreciate the scale of it and the intricacy of it. And it has its own kind of jaw-dropping moments. They're not standing on a cliff looking out over the distance.
Yeah, and that goes back to the authenticity that we were talking about. For instance, like you said, in the towns, you can always find the shopping district where all the blacksmith and the shopkeeper are at night because the red lanterns come out. And, yeah, it looks very distinctly Chinese. And I guess that's the thing. It puts you right in the place of the game. And certainly you're certainly constantly reminded that you're playing in this kind of ancient Chinese world. And that's really all that you need from, I think, a graphical engine. It just needs to enable everything else that the game's got going on. And I think it does that. That, and I have to say, the character designs are just impeccable. There are bits of animation in cutscenes which seem a bit jilted, but other than that, the actual character models are just beautifully recreated. And given that you spend most of your time in the game looking at them, that kind of works to the game's benefit.
There was a patch that got released today, and some of the animations seem to have been fixed, if that helps.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well.
I haven't actually turned it on today. I did download the patch, but I'll check that out for sure. That's a good thing. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about in this short podcasty thing, the actual game design itself, because I know we've all got issues with the way open world games work at times, and this being an open world game itself. The good thing I think that this one has is it feels very different to other open world games in that the stuff that you do in the game is it never feels purposeless. Like Assassin's Creed is a perfect example of that. I love pretty much everything else about Assassin's Creed, but you pull up the map and you've got 30 billion icons to chase around, and most of them are chests that have, you know, like $10 in them, or a bit of paper floating around, which doesn't add anything to the game whatsoever. Any icon that's in Dynasty Warriors 9 actually has a purpose and makes me want to go and explore it. And I like that. That's the way I think open world games should be.
I don't entirely agree with you on that. There have been a few like side quest type things where I've come away thinking, well, what was the point of this aside from getting experience and and a few items like, hey, Cao Cao, can you go and fight these dudes for me? They're just out there in the field. It's like, okay, I'll go do that, but it doesn't. Some of the side quests feel a little bit aimless. But then, as you said earlier, there are the other ones which are directly contributing to the war effort, and not just in lowering the level of the end boss of the chapter to make it easier, but some side quests will make it so that certain allies show up in battle who wouldn't show up if you hadn't done that quest. And I think that's a really neat touch.
Yeah, that's true. I must admit, I'd actually forgotten about those minor quests because they are entirely optional. And in this case, I haven't felt the OCD that I do with certain other open world games to actually go and, you know, clear the map of them. I don't know why. I just haven't. I think because the game's paced at a certain rate that it makes you feel like you need to keep progressing towards the next objective. It's easy to push away stuff that, yeah, doesn't seem to add to the immediate war effort. So, yeah, the game does a really good job of driving you to the next main quest, whereas other open world games, you can get stuck in a rut where you don't really, you know, you go and do a million other things before you try to get onto the next story quest.
I like that that it's open world, but it's also set out in chapters as well. So each open world that you're in, it's only based on what the current mission is. So you can't just go and say, for instance, in a Zelda game where you might go and fight a dungeon, but you could also be going and finding 900 Korok seeds. It's not that kind of level of ridiculousness. It's basically like each chapter, everything that you do in that chapter is striving towards that end goal, even though it's open world. And I think it is designed rather well in comparison to other open world games.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's there's not that much to actually collect in the game, which is unusual for an open world game. Most open world games try and get you to collect a whole bunch of stuff. This one doesn't, and that's for the good of it. Like, there are stuff you can collect along the way, and you can use it to upgrade your weapons and all that kind of stuff, but you generally come across it just by riding your horse around the landscape, which you're doing anyway. So, yeah. Can't think of anything. The only time I felt like I needed to collect something was when I was getting furniture for my little house. that was good fun. And you just bought that from the shopkeeper and then made your house all pretty.
Yeah. I mean, there are things on... When you open up the map, there are a lot of little icons and stuff, but they're not really things to collect. They're more like landmarks to go see or battles that you can go and take part in or not. I think just to further clarify what you were saying, Brad, as far as I know, it is like it's not. What Brad isn't saying that it's like still a level-based game that has sort of open-ish world levels. It is.
No, not at all.
The whole of China condensed, well, obviously condensed to some extent, but you can go and spend 6 hours running from one side of the map to the other side if you really want to. There's just not really any point to doing that, and the game doesn't. The game discourages you from doing that by having each chapter is set in a particular part of the map and the kind of immediate surrounding areas. And then when you get to the end of the chapter, there'll be a cutscene, and then at the start of the next chapter, you'll be magically transported to wherever that cutscene is set. So you don't, wherever that chapter is set. So you don't need to, there isn't as much mindless running around to get, just to get to the start of the next quest. That's all. I think I'm rambling, but.
No, that's, yeah, that's correct. Like, any chapter is set within a certain section of the map. So for instance, you'll start in the far southeast corner if you're playing as the Wu, and that's their bit of land, and then you'll find yourself moving up towards the middle of the map to bop Salsa on the head. And that'll be basically the corner of the map for that particular chapter. The next chapter you'll be at war with Liu Bei, and then you'll go from east to west and so on and so forth. So it's, yeah, it breaks it down quite nicely, but there's nothing actually stopping you while that's going on, dropping into your little hideaway house at the very far north of China as well. If you wanted to, you know, rearrange some furniture in some downtime, you can do that. And there's obviously a fast travel system, so you don't have to run across the entirety of China to get there. You can if you want, and there won't be a single loading screen. I think, yeah, I'm pretty sure he quoted it like 6 hours or something to jump on the back of the horse and ride from one corner of the map to the other. You can do that, but no one's going to do that. Saying that, there will be a YouTube now of somebody doing that.
Yeah, probably depends what level your horse is, because your horse levels up and gets faster and stuff as you ride. And every campaign I've done, it doesn't take long before my horse is a significantly higher level than my actual character.
Yes, and if you fight,
not that they're really comparable, but
you can also fight from the back of the horse, and it levels up the horse that way as well. But unfortunately, the one criticism I really have of the whole game, the one significant criticism anyway, is they still haven't managed to get horse battles down right, and it doesn't feel good fighting from the back of the horse. Which is a pity, because cavalry did play a role during the Three Kingdoms era, and there were leaders that were better from the back of the horse, and there was, you know, significant numbers of jousts that went on between two horse riders and stuff. And it would have been good if they found some way of putting that in the game, but I guess they've got to give themselves the next target for Dynasty Warriors 10.
Speaking of targets, but I don't like the archery that much either. It feels
the archery's a bit of nothing, isn't it?
It feels very like an archery system for a game made in 2000, which is, considering we've had games like Horizon and Tomb Raider and any number of others that have all figured out how to do archery really well, there are enough examples out there for Koei Tecmo to copy and do a good job of it.
Yeah, and I think the other problem that faces archery in the game is that, you know, when you're shooting a bow, you're really kind of trying to take out one target. And the nature of this game is obviously you're fighting a large group, or there's at least a large group of enemies around you at any point in time. So it becomes hard to kind of really work the bow as such. And yeah, it's a difficult one. I think there are things they could do to improve that. Like, for instance, you can get fire arrows. It would be good if you could, like, set the entire forest around you ablaze and kind of burn everybody out, because that was a tactic they used back then.
I just want to be able to draw my bow. As it is, you just aim and then you press the square button and you shoot. I want to be able to draw the bow and hold it and to take careful aim and then unleash.
Yeah, it'd be great. It would be really good. It'd also be good if you could do some kind of, like, for instance, if you're in the middle of a battle and you pull your bow out, you get a couple of seconds of slow motion or something, which gives you time to get a shot off on an enemy leader or something like that, just to add that extra depth to it. But again, these things will probably come at some stage or other. This is a very new approach to Dynasty Warriors for Koei, and I think they focused on the stuff that they needed to make it a really good game.
They did surprisingly well with adding stealth elements, which I'm sure I don't need to tell anyone that usually when you try to take a game that isn't a dedicated stealth game and add some stealth segments into it, it just never works. They've done that here, but it does work reasonably well. And I think that's where the bow comes in handy and where I wish it was a bit easier to use and more efficient. But yeah, kudos to Koei Tecmo for adding in a stealth system that works and isn't just boring and frustrating.
Yep. Yep. And on that note, I think we've gone a little bit over time for what we intended for the podcast, but it's a game that I think we'll all be talking about for a long time yet. I think it sets a new mark for these kinds of, or this series. It'll be interesting to see what Koei does next with Samurai Warriors, because to be honest, I kind of want them all to be open world now. I'm not gonna sit so well with a level-based Warriors game again. So bring on open world Japan next. And on
can
that,
I just make one.
Yeah, of course.
One last comment. One thing that I don't know if I like or don't like, but there's no fall damage, I discovered, which I discovered by climbing to the top of Mount Song, which you have to do as part of a quest in South South's campaign. And then I was like, oh, enjoying the view, and then figuring out, well, how do I get down? I'm just going to jump because it'll be fun and it'll be funny and I'll die, but it'll be worth it. And then I jumped and then spent probably a good 10 seconds falling however many thousands of meters it is, and then just landed and just tuck into a forward roll and stand up like nothing happened.
It gets even better when you try and climb a mountain with a horse. yeah, those horses, they're not so great to be fighting on the back of enemies on, but those horses can climb Everest, I swear. They just run right up it. So yeah, there's issues with that stuff, and I'm sure that'll be refined for future games.
I'm not saying it's an issue. I'm saying I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, I'm sure
the trophy popped while I was halfway through my fall.
I'm sure they'll find ways of making it enjoyable and or more realistic and or both at some stage. It opens a lot of this game opens a new door for the series, and it's going to be exciting to see where it goes from here, because yeah, it is definitely a new chapter for Dynasty Warriors, and it's exciting, really exciting as a fan of the series. So on that note, thanks very much for jumping in and having a chat, Matt and Brad, and we will go to a bit more music from Dynasty Warriors to finish up.